Here we're starting here on the top of Pei Bet Amud Aleph by the two dots. Hamalei Rav Huna, the Rabbo break. Rav Huna said to Rabbo, his son, Rabbo Bar Rav Huna, my time alosh kichat kamei de Rav Chista. Why don't you spend more time with Rav Chista? Rav Chista was more of a peer with Rav Huna. The mechadadin shmate, that he has a strong learning background, that knows his stuff well, and you could pick up something from him. It would be kedai for you to spend more time with him. Hamalei, my yizel gabei. Why should I go to learn by him? When I go and learn by him, he starts to ask me questions about general topics. Nothing to do with Torah. Man, Da'ayel, the Beit HaKise, tells me, one who goes into the bathroom, Lo Leite Vehedya, that a person who goes to the bathroom shouldn't sit down quickly. Lo Litarach, and he shouldn't press too hard or try too hard to defecate, dahai karkashto atlat shine yotif. Because the rectum sits on these three teeth-like glands. Dilma mishtamto shine de karkashto. Maybe they will slip or tear if the person sits down too quickly or he attempts to defecate too hard. Va'ati de de sakono. And he'll bring himself to danger. So his father responds to him, very interesting answer. I'm like, who asik b'chaye debriato? Ba'atamar demili da'alma? He says, you say he's dealing with issues of life and death, the ability to understand how to deal with the world in general, and you're telling me he's talking about useless or stam items? Hoshkein zilgabeg, take off, you should be there right now, learning from him. Now these are important matters, it's not always the diktukei halacha, there's also just general conduct that are important and guidance to help you to act appropriately and to know how to keep yourself healthy. That's an important part of learning Torah, is that you also be healthy. Hayu lefanav tzror v'cheres. So if he has a choice now on Shabbat between a tzror and a cheres to use for his toilet paper now, there's a choice between a pebble and a shard of pottery. Ravuna amar mikanech b'tzror, v'ena mikanech b'cheres. Ravuna says he should use the pebble and not use the cheres. Rav Chista Amar, Rav Chista says, Mikaneach b'cheres, he should use the shard, v'enu mikaneach b'tzror, not use the pebble. The question here is a question that Rav Natan Baruchia really dealt with yesterday in Rav Yochanan's statement, which is, we have an option here. Tzror, muksa. It's a rock. So it's muksa. I have kli cheres, which is a kli. It's a shame kli is not muksa, but we know that kli's cheres has some deleterious effects. It's sharp. It can cause damage. It has the problem of kshafim. There are other mitigating factors in kli cheres. So which do I choose? Which of the two evils do I choose here? Do I choose muksa and take the option of the tzror, or do I choose kli cheres with all that's embedded in using kli cheres? But then at least I'm not in violation of muksa. Rav Natan Baruchia yesterday read into Rabbi Yochanan's statement that that's exactly the choice you make. We make the choice to take the pebble instead of the kli cheres. Over here we have a machloka between Rav Huna and Rav Chista in this manner. So here we have a braita that says, if he has a choice between the pebble and the shard of pottery, mikaneach b'cheres, ve'eino mikaneach b'tzror, then he should use the pottery, the shard of pottery, and not use the pebble. T'yufta de Rav Huna. That's a strong kasha against Rav Huna that undermines Rav Huna's premise. So Targama, Rafram Bar Papa Kameid Rav Chista. So Rafram Bar Papa explained in front of Rav Chista, Alibid Rav Huna, defense of Rav Huna's position. V'ognei Kelim. We're talking about a specific type of shard of pottery that is not subject to some of the worries that we had before, which is that we're talking about the handle of the Kli Cheres. Something that is not necessarily sharp. It's rounded. So then we don't have the fears that we talked about with Kli Cheres before. Whether it's the fact that it's v'sakana, that it could cut the individual, whether it's the asherat nimin, severing the hairs on the body, because of the smoothness of this part of the Kli Cheres, we don't worry about it. Obviously, the last issue of kshafim might still be there, but leaving that aside, here is a way to answer why, by the braita, it favors the Kli Cheres, and why Rav Huna and other circumstances might favor the tzror, the pebble. So, hayu lefanav, tzror v'savim. Now, he has a choice between a pebble, and let's call it grass to use as his toilet paper. Now Rashi asks about this asabim, what exactly is the issue with using it? Rashi says, Shasabim lachim, they're moist, V'chodchim et ha-basar. So there's a danger involved. So similar to the kli cheres, which you're opting between muksa and danger. So to over here, it's a choice between here, the tzror, again the pebble, and asabim, which means something that's dangerous. In that sense, the question would have been, so very good. So exactly what you just asked is what Rashi says afterwards. Then he brings from Rabotai, and he says, Mefarshim mishum tlisha, that they are problem here of detaching the grass. Ve'eni yodea mahu. I don't know what they're talking about, Rashi says. Di'iba sabim mechubarim mi'kaman deshori. If they're attached to the ground, who would be ever be mat there? You cannot be toleish on Shabbat. Before, when we said the kavod abriyot, that you could violate something, even though we said lo taseh Shabbat Torah, we meant a violation of a din derabanan. Nobody would be matir a din d'oraita for kavod abriyot. So who says you can be toleish the grass? Uchmedume'ani. So he says, I think this is what they must mean. That they are attached to the ground and is utilizing them while they are still attached to the ground. And that's the question over here. What do we opt for? Do we opt for tsror, which is muksa? Or do we opt for the asabim that are attached to the ground, which run a risk? Some sort of risk here, the possibility that you could take them out, even though maybe the dover sheino mitkavein. But there's a good likelihood or a high likelihood that you could run into that problem. As well as the issue of whether the asabim are really not muksa themselves, because you can't use them or utilize them on Shabbat. So, Chistav Rav Amnuna, Chad Amar Mekanech B'Tzror, Ein Mekanech B'Sabim. One of them said, use the pebble, don't use the grass. Chad Amar, Mekanech B'Sabim, Ein Mekanech B'Tzror. Use the grass and don't use the pebble. Meitive, HaMekanech B'Davar Sha'or Sheletet Bo, Shinav Atachtonot Noshrot. Someone who uses it as toilet paper, something that is flammable, that causes those teeth that we talked about before, those teeth-like glands that hold the rectum together, they slip out when you use something that is flammable. Gemara says, okay, that should be a clear answer to our question over here, because we're talking about a pebble, that's not flammable. When you're talking about the grass, that is flammable. Gemara says, lo kasho, havalachin abiyaveshim. Depends in what form you're getting the grass. The grass, when it's dried out, you're right, it's flammable, and that would be something that everybody would agree is unacceptable, and you would opt for the tzror. Question here is that we're dealing with moist grass. We're dealing with fresh grass. Again, whether it's cut or not cut, depending on which pshat and rashi that you subscribe to. But you're talking about moist grass that's not flammable. So therefore, that's not a question on our case here. Hanitzrach lefanot ve'eno nifne. Someone who needs to relieve themselves and doesn't relieve themselves. V'chista v'ravina. What is the result of such behavior? This is something that we bumped into earlier on in the Masechta, also in Brachot. Chad amar ruach ra'ah sholetet bo. One says that ruach ra'ah here, not in the traditional sense of ruach ra'ah, a bad spirit, but rather bad breath. Chad amar ruach zu'ama sholetet bo. And others say that he becomes malodorous. It's not simply bad breath, it's that there's a bad odor that emanates from him. Tanya kamandamar ruach zuama shalotet bo. There's a brayta that supports the position of the one who says that it makes him malodorous. The Tanya, anitzrach l'nikavav, someone who needs to relieve themselves. And instead of doing so, ba'ochel, eats, and that, domeh l'tanur, shisiku al gab afaro. It's equivalent of someone who then tries to cook in an oven on top of the existing ashes, without clearing it out and then restarting the fire, reheating the oven. He leaves the existing ashes there and then just tries to heat on top of it. So there's no value in terms of the heat because the heat is absorbed by the ashes, doesn't allow it to really heat up properly. So same thing here, eating on top of someone who needs to relieve themselves, you're just piling on top of what's already there and it's no value to it. V'zoi tchilat ruach zu'ama. And this is the beginning of being malodorous, of having a bad odor. Hutzrach lifanot ve'eno yachol lifanot. So here, as opposed to before where he needs to go to defecate, and he opts not to, over here he needs to defecate, but he's unable to do. He's unable to bring himself. He's constipated. Amar Rav Chista, again, this is something we saw in Brachot, the same suggestions were made there. Yamod v'yeshev, yamod v'yeshev. He should change his position. He should stand up, sit down, stand up, sit down. He should move around, thinking that maybe that will free up the ability to defecate. Rav Chanan Meir Nardar Mar, Istalek Litzdadim. That he should move to the sides. Meaning, as Rashi says, "Shebadak atzmo bezavit zu, istalek lezavit acheret v'yivdok." Meaning that you should change locations or corners within the bathroom. That way, you get up, you change your position, you try again. Rav Nuna Amar, Yimashmesh Bitzror Ba'oto Makom. Now he says, stay in place. Just use a small pebble to stimulate, as a suppository, to stimulate defecating. That we saw earlier in the beginning of the Sugya, the idea of using the small pebble, again, to stimulate, whether you could do the same on Shabbat like you do on Chol. And we said before you had to do a Shinoi on Shabbat. When you did this, then on Chol. But this idea that the pebbles are not only used as toilet paper, but they were also used to stimulate one who was constipated. Rabbanan Amrei, Rabbanan say the easiest solution is, Yisiach Dato, forget about it. So Amrei Ravacha Brei Derov, Ol Ravashi, Boshkein Dechi Masach Date, Lo Maftei. Wait a minute, if he forgets about it, he's not going to take care of the situation. He's going to remain constipated, it's going to be a problem. It's going to remain a problem for him because he's constipated and now he's not thinking about it. I didn't mean forget about that. I mean forget about everything else. He's got to focus. If he focuses, that is what will solve the problem. I saw this Arab merchant, the Kam V'yotiv, the Kam V'yotiv. He was constipated. So he stood up, sat down, stood up, sat down. Of the Shafach Kigdeira. Until he loosened his bowels and he was flowing like a pot, boiling pot. And here is some etiquette again, something that we had bumped into before in Brachot. Anichnas l'sudat keva yalich yud pamim mishal arba arba amot. Person is entering into a sudat keva. On their day, a sudat keva was the equivalent of an appointment in Hadassah, meant that you're going to be there all day. So if you're going to be there all day, you have to, proper etiquette is to relieve yourself beforehand. To get up in the middle of the meal to go to the bathroom was unacceptable. During these long, intricate, and many courses, and it was inappropriate to leave the meal in the middle. So you must relieve yourself beforehand. So how do you do that? So when you're entering into such a sudat keva, you have to walk 10 times, 4 amot. Meaning that you stop each time. You go walk 10 times, 4 amot, 4 amot, sit down, 4 amot, sit down. You keep trying that 10 times. And make sure that you have relieved yourself before you enter into the meal. Ramila, and some say that the better option is Dalad Pamim shall eser eser amot. That you should go 4 times, so 10 amot. So the question of which is more efficacious, walking a longer distance or getting up and down. One option has you getting up and down more often, one of them has you walking longer distances. Vinifna Vinichnas. Then he relieves himself and then he enters into the meal via Shabim Gomal and he sits in his place peacefully. I mean, that will ensure that he doesn't have to get up in the middle of the meal. Alright, that ends that sugya. Now the next Mishnah really is going to lead us into the next perek. It's really a machloket rishonim, how we get into this next perek. And this Mishnah might be the lead into that this next perek. Now this continues what we've seen until now, which is it takes an object, a material, and says, what are the minimum standards for said that material? And that is cheres. When it comes to shards or pottery, how much do you need in order to be chayav, to carry out what's considered to be a significant amount? So, kedei litein ben patsim lechaveiro, divrei Rabbi Yehuda. It's enough to be a spacer between the boards. Whenever they stack up boards, you can see this whenever they're doing construction. If they bring a large truck full of boards, they don't stack the boards right on top of each other. They put spacers between the boards so that they don't warp and so that they sit evenly on top of each other. Those spacers, those little spacers that are made out of kli cheres, that is what we're speaking about here. That's a significant piece. That's what Rabbi Yehuda says. Rabbi Meir says, enough kedei lachtot bo et ha'or. Enough to stoke the fire or to remove a coal from the fire. Enough that it distances your hand from the fire. Rabbi Yossi Omer, kedei lekabel bo revi'it. It has to be sufficient in order that you can draw a revi'it log of water in it. Amar Rabbi Meir, afal pi she'en raya ledavar. Even though I don't have a proof to this, zecher ledavar, I do have a mention of what I'm about to say. And that's from the Pasuk in Yishayahu, Perek Lamed, Pasuk Yudalid. Over there, the Perek is describing what's going to happen to Bnei Yisrael if they continue to bichoteh, they continue in their bad ways. Hashem says that it's just going to build up so much that eventually you're just going to explode like a piece of pottery. The way that a potter, when he's not happy with what he has or didn't work out, he smashes the pottery. So that's the same way that you're going to explode. And those shards of pottery that come from that explosion, from that breaking of the Kli Cheres, V'lo Yimatzei V'mechitato Cheres Lachtot Eish Miyakud. That amongst those pieces that are left from the smashing of the pottery, you will not even find a shard of pottery from that bursting, lachtot eish miyakud, to take fire out of the hearth. Lachtot can be used in different ways. Lachtot can be to stoke, but over here, lachtot here is eish miyakud, is to remove fire or a coal from the hearth itself, from the fire itself. So he says, look, you see that? What is the smallest piece of pottery that you would have thought of that's significant, that is stoking the fire or using it in a fire? And that's why Hashem says that after you're smashed, you won't even find a piece of any significance. What's that significance? That it would be used within the fire. So that's my Zecher the Davar that I'm bringing from Yishayahu. Now, it sounds like a very good proof. Forget about a Zecher the Davar, except for the fact that he omitted the latter half of the Pasuk, which is Amrle Rav Yossi, Misham Rayo. What's the proof from there? The next line in the Pasuk is V'lachsof mayim migeveh, and to draw water from the cistern. So wait a minute. That's why it's only a zecher ledavar and not raya ledavar, because the pasuk does continue and say to draw water from the cistern. So that also shows that drawing water with the Kli Cheres is a utilization that is of significance. So now the Gemara starts after the parentheses. Mistavra. Let's understand here. Shura derbiosi nafish. If I was just looking in the Mishnah, and I said to you, in terms of size here, which is bigger between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi, we would assume that Rabbi Yossi's shiur is bigger. If I asked you if you need a shard of pottery to simply stoke or move a single coal, or you need a piece of pottery to draw a revealed log of water, you would definitely say that the piece that is bigger is the one that's used to draw the water. That would be my conclusion. Umikra. But from the pasuk that we just quoted from Yishayahu, it seems just the opposite. Shira de Rabbi Meir nofish. Sounds like Rabbi Meir's size is bigger. Because in the pasuk it says, where potter will smash the pottery, and then after the pottery is the shattered pieces are there, you won't find in it not even a shard to stoke the fire, and not even something to draw water. Now when you say not even and not even, what you do is you move to smaller and smaller items. Doesn't make sense to say, well, you won't even find a small piece, and then say, well, you won't even find a bigger piece. Of course, if you can't find a small piece, you're not going to find the big piece. So that means that when the puzzle is continuing, it's diminishing in size. That means that the first part of the puzzle that says you won't find anything to stoke the fire with or remove the coal from the hearth, that will be the bigger piece. And then you won't even find enough to draw water with. That would be even a smaller piece. If you think the Rabbi Yossi is bigger, you curse them with a smaller piece, and then you curse them with a bigger piece? It doesn't make sense. You couldn't find the small one. You certainly won't find that big one. No, you keep cursing them. The curse gets greater, as you say, the smaller and smaller piece that they can't find. So now we have a stira. We're not sure which way the direction is going in terms of sizing. So Marbaye, matnita nami lachtot esh mikidag dola. Wait a minute. You have to understand what we're looking at size-wise. You have to understand the way I explained the Mishnah, and I did this intentionally, is that when we said it in the Mishnah, I said, oh, that was to move a single coal. That made it sound like the shard was very small. But the way the Pasuk describes it, it's enough to remove a coal from a large hearth. That's a huge fire. That you can't get near at all. You need a large poker or something that distances you from the fire to engage with anything in there because it's a large fire. Even if you want to get a single coal, you need a lot more in terms of a shard of pottery than to engage with that fire to keep your distance. So that's what the Pasuk means, and that's how we'll have to explain what's in the Mishnah. That when Rabbi Meir says, "Kedei lachdol bo ta'or," that's not just to move a single coal. That's not just to small piece. We're talking about a large enough piece to deal with a large fire. That's much bigger, and then we'll be consistent between the Pasuk and the Mishnah that Rabbi Meir's shir is bigger than Rabbi Yossi's shir. Rabbi Yossi Meir Misham Raya. Shapir Kamerle Rabbi Yossi the Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yossi has a good claim against Rabbi Meir. He says, look, follow through on the Pasuk. The Pasuk says that there is something of significance that's smaller than your shir. And that's how the continuum of the Pasuk. Rabbi Meir, Lomi Baye Kamar. The Pasuk is reading not only this, but this. Lomi Baye Mide de Choshiv Linche, de Lodishtakachle, Not only will you not find something that is significant to people, but even something that's insignificant you won't find. So the level or the threshold of significance ends when we're talking about stoking fires or removing things from the fire. After that, it's not classified as significant. So why does the pasuk mention it? That's exactly what the pasuk's indicating. Not only will you not find something that's significant for man, you won't even find something that's insignificant. What's insignificant? A little shard that you can draw a little water with. You won't even find that. But that's not an indication of significance. That doesn't tell you that that shard of pottery is significant. That's telling you that that's something insignificant. And that's how Rabbi Meir read the pasuk, said it's not a problem for him, and that's why he quoted only the first part of the pasuk and left out the latter half of the pasuk. That we end the perek, and we begin the new perek. The new perek takes us away from the Gemara Shabbat a little bit for the next number of Mishnayot. It's going to take us on a trip through Shas, a number of items that have nothing to do with Shabbat, and they're clearly not related. It's not even a question of correlation. There's nothing that has to do with Shabbat at all. So the question is, what is it doing here? Rashi and Tosafot have different approaches to this. The Gemara is about to quote something we're going to see in the Mishnah, and then bring a proof to it from a pasuk. Tosafot says, it's very easy, I'll tell you what the connection is here. The paradigm that was laid out in the previous perek, the last Mishnah in the previous perek, had a paradigm in it. It said, I have information, and I can then bring a quasi-proof to that from a pasuk. And that's the format of all these Mishnayot. Format of all these Mishnayot is, I have a halacha or I have a din, and then I'm going to bring in a pasuk to bolster that position. Rashi says that eventually we're going to end up in this same format, we're going to end up getting to a Mishnah that talks about Mila. How do we know that you're marchitzim et Mila? How do you know that you're allowed to wash the Mila, even on Shabbat, meaning that there's danger on the third day, and therefore one is allowed to boil hot water for a sakanat nefashot of a baby on the third day. So eventually, in this format of Mishnayot, in this parak, we're going to get there. So Rashi says, that's the real reason for the parak, is that Mishnah about Mila. That's what has to do with Shabbat. Well, once it did that, the format that it has there, it brought in all these other Mishnayot. Right, so exactly. That's why Tosfot's rejection of Rashi's approach is that, if that's true, it should have brought that Mishnah first. It should have brought the Mishnah about Mila and Shabbat first, and then brought the others as a tangential connection and bring them in. Why would you bring in the tangent first and then get to Shabbat afterwards? So that's why he thinks it's connected to the previous Mishnah. The other thing he says is that there is a parak later on, which we know, Rabbi Elazar de Mila, that deals with Brit Mila. That was the whole reason for the parak, is to get Brit Mila in here, put it in that parak. Why would you have a whole parak by itself? So the answer is probably both. Which is that it's true that the paradigm set by the last Mishnah and the previous parak brought them to bring in these other Mishnayot, which led them into that Mishnah of Shabbat. And that Mishnah of Shabbat is also in a similar format. The reason they would bring in these other Mishnayot with a similar format is because it does eventually end up in something that deals with Shabbat. So it's probably a mixture of both what Rashi and Tosfot say over here. So now we begin. Amar Rabbi Akiva. Minayin avodah zarah shimetama b'masa. How do I know that avodah zarah, when you carry it, gives one tuma masa kinida, the same way that nida has tumat masa, shenemar. So you quote a pasuk from the same parak in Yishayahu, which bolsters Tosafot's explanation over here, the same parak in parak lamed in Yishayahu. Here it's in the latter half of that parak, which is a nechama. The first half of the parak talks about how things are going to go bad. The latter half says that Bnei Yisrael eventually will realize their mistake and come back. And in their coming back, they will cast away their silver idols or their silver adorned idols and their golden adorned idols. And it says over there, what are you going to do with them? Tizreim kamo dava, say tomar lo. You will cast them away, scatter them, kamo dava. Now dava, we'll leave it as undefined for 1 second. Say tomar lo, you're going to tell them, good riddance, get out of here. You're going to chase all this avodah zarah out because you're going to know what the truth is. You're going to want Hashem back. So now, the word dava is utilized in the Torah in association with a nida and a zava. So the connection is, tizreim kamo dava. You're going to scatter, you're going to disperse the avodah zarah to dava, dava meaning like the nida. So why would you scatter or shoot them out like the nida? Some of the translations of dava were not literally the nida, but the dam nida. The dam of the nida, the dam of the cloth of the nida that people we saw in last parak was ma'us. People throw that out. They don't keep it. Maybe it's referring not necessarily to the nida herself, but to the menstrual blood. That also could be true, although in their day, nida comes from the word nidui. Nidui means to excommunicate, to be pushed outside. And that was true in their day, that a nida was considered to be on the fringe of society at that time. She was distanced. She had her own tent, both because of the issues of tumah. And when we did the Masechet Nida, we pointed out that many of the Rishonim believed that there was a choli involved there, and that it was a contagious choli, nida, and therefore there was reason to distance oneself from a isha nida, or the gaze of an isha nida. But either way, dava has to do with nida and distancing. So that's the pasuk in using the allegory is saying, you'll throw away and distance the avodah zarah like the dava, whether it's the menstrual blood or the nida herself. But you see this parallel drawn between avodah zarah and the nida. So just like a nida is mitama, we know from the psukim by zava is mitama, but even by masa, the masa can function in two ways. Masa can be either you carry the object, or the object carries you. It can be true like by the zav or zava. You can carry a zava, or the zava or zav can carry you. And either way, there's tuma that passes with through masa. So now this avodah zarah should have that same din of tuma of masa, that if you carry it without touching it, I mean, obviously, if you touch it, then there's nothing to talk about. That's nogeya. So masa has to be a case where you're carrying it without coming into direct contact with it. So if you do that, how do we know that you're also tamei? So Rabbi Akiva says, because I see this connection between nida and avodah zarah. Ma nida metama b'masa, avodah zarah metama b'masa. Right? It's not hatam. Now the Gemara quotes a Mishnah from avodah zarah. The Mishnah of avodah zarah deals with exactly our case, quotes all of our Gemara over here as well. And that's why, again, these Mishnayot really belong in the other Masechtot. They're brought down here because, again, this paradigm or this similar structure. Mi shaya beito samuch l'avodah zarah. Someone who had a house adjacent to avodah zarah. V'nafal. And then it falls down. Asur livnoto. He cannot rebuild it. He cannot rebuild it because he's giving benefit to the avodah zarah. When he rebuilds his house, they had a common wall between him and the avodah zarah. He puts up his wall, then he's also building a wall that will benefit the avodah zarah. So Ketzad Yaseh, so what should he do? Kones l'tof shelo dalet amot. He should pull back into his property for amot. Uboneh. And then he builds his wall back. Well, then as Tosfot points out over here, he does benefit avodah zarah as well. They just are the beneficiaries of the additional four amot that he just left behind. Because he's going to build his wall in. They now have this extra space over there. The Gemara here does not deal with it. The Gemara avodah zarah asks it explicitly. Well, isn't he benefiting them? The Gemara there gives two answers. Either he'll make that into a latrine, meaning that he'll use that as his night latrine. Or the other possibility is that he fills it in with the equivalent of what we call barbed wire. That he fills it in with gizmi vihiti, which is thorns, prickly bushes. He puts in things there that make it unusable. He makes the space unusable, but then he just pulls his wall back so they will not be beneficiaries of his building the wall. Shelo shel avodah zarah. In the first case, the wall belonged to him. The full wall was built in his property, and the wall belonged to him. But as long as the wall was erect, the avodah zarah benefited from it. If he rebuilds the wall, they will benefit again. This case is a case where they have a shared wall. The wall is shared literally. They each own half the wall, and two amot of the wall are in the avodah zarah's property, and two amot of the wall are in his property. So it's literally sitting on joint property, and it's a joint wall. So nidon mechsa mechsa. So first of all, when we look at the ground, we split it up half and half. Two amot goes to the avodah zarah, two amot goes to him. Therefore, when he backs four amot into his property, he can count two amot from where the wall was standing. Where the wall was standing counts, two of those amot count towards his four amot, because he owns those two amot, they really belong to him. That's number one. Avanav etzav afarav. Now, what about the materials of the wall? The wall crumbled, it fell over. Now they jointly own that which is there, all the joint materials that were in this wall. What does he do with it? These items have a din of avodah zarah. Again, the Gemara in avodah zarah says that's a case where they actually worship the wall or the stones themselves, because otherwise there's no issue. Meaning that the wall itself, just because it's part of the Beit Avodah Zarah, does not automatically attain an Isur Hana necessarily. It's Mechuber the Karka. There are reasons why it would not attain Avodah Zarah. So here's a case where they actually bowed down to the wall or the stones. That was the Avodah Zarah. And not only that, but they bowed down to each stone, the Yerushalmi says, because otherwise you have a problem of what happens to an Avodah Zarah that falls apart by itself. It's a question, the Gemara Machlok between Rav and Shmuel in the Gemara and Avodah Zarah. Avodah Zarah that self-destructs, is that Mevatel the Avodah Zarah or not? So in order to avoid that problem, Yerushalmi says that they bow down to every stone, to every eight, meaning that everything here is Avodah Zarah to solve this problem. So now it falls to you. Metamim kisheretz. All the leftovers on the wall are metamei kisheretz. Shenemar. Because the pasuk says in Dvarim, shakech tishakatzenu, that when it comes to Avodah Zarah, that you should treat it like a sheretz, a sheketz, which is something that's tamei. You distance yourself from it. You keep your distance. You don't allow it in your possession. So Rekiva omer, kidnida. Rekiva says it's like a nida, shenemar. Again, what he quotes in our Mishnah, Tizraim kamo dava. Ma nida mitama b'masa, af Avodah Zarah mitama b'masa. So we have machloke between Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim as to the tumah of Avodah Zarah. Is it tumat sheretz? Or is it tumat nida? Amar Rabba. Rabba, as an aside, darshins the pasuk and says, what does that word Tizraim mean? Damar kra, nechrinu minach kizar. Tizraim means from the shoresh, he's saying here, not to scatter, but rather zar, to be a stranger. Estrange them from you, alienate them from you, kizar, like a stranger. Say to Marlo, tell him, get out of here, he can ace alto Marlo. Don't come back in here. Meaning that's the idea of Tizraim. Tizraim means to scatter them and to disperse them, but he's using the word zar to explain it. So he's just explaining what the word Tizraim means. Ve'amar Rabba. And now we have another statement from Rabba trying to deal with the machlok between Rabbi Kiva and Chachamim. We're going to have Rabba's approach, and then afterwards Rabbi Elazar is going to come and give a different approach. So we have two Amoraim trying to explain this machlok between Rabbi Kiva and Chachamim. So Rabba's approach is, Bimasa tekuli amar lo plige demitama. Everybody agrees, that means the Chachamim and Rabbi Kiva agree, that Avodah Zarah is mitama bimasa. Taikash the nida. The pasuk that Rabbi Akiva brings is definitive. It says, the hekesh between Avodah Zarah and Dava and the Nida. Ki plige be'evin misma. What they argue about is a particular din in Nida called Evin Misma. Evin Misma, I'll just quickly do it here again. Rashi and Tosafot here disagree with it, as well as in Avodah Zarah, or actually last time we saw it was in the Gemara Nida, that Rashi and Tosafot define Evin Misma differently. Rashi says Evin Misma is a case where you have stilts that are holding up a very heavy rock or something on top of it. Nida, ozav, yoshvim alav. And the nida or the zav are sitting on top of it. And there are kelim underneath it. So that, according to Rashi, is what we call evin misma. They put this heavy stone on top of these stilts, and now they're sitting on top of it. There are kelim, there are other objects, utensils that are underneath. The nida or the Zav, Zava are not weighing on those kelim because the rock is being held up by stilts. Nevertheless, the Tumah penetrates down and it's as if they're sitting on top of those kelim. That's the way Rashi defines Evin Misma. Tosafot says no. The case of Evin Misma is a case where the Evin is sitting directly on top of the kelim. It's just that the weight of it is so big or so heavy that when the Nida or the Zava goes on top of it, it makes no difference. It adds no pressure, it adds nothing to the weight that is being pressed upon that which is below. You wouldn't know that they were on top, because they are de minimis to the weight of the entire object. They are so small in comparison to the weight of the entire object, and therefore they're not meaningful in the weight calculation. So that's what an Evid Misma is. Tosafot also points out, it can go in the other way around, which is that if the Nida or the Zavah have their hand underneath such a rock, and then the Tahor walks on top of it, are they considered to be as if they're holding up the object on top? And Tosafot says that the Tumah penetrates the Evin Misma in that way. Again, it's not related to our Gemara, but this Evin Misma, whether you say the way Rashi does, the way Tosafot does, what the Evin Misma is, it gives off Tumah in a way that Masa wouldn't even do. Masa says that I have to actually carry the object. I carry an object, or the object carries me. One of the two. On the other hand, Evin Misma says that there's some sort of detachment between me and the object. Rashi says because it's on stilts. Tosafot says because of the weight of the rock. There's some sort of detachment. So even though it's technically carrying me, I'm either above it or I'm carrying it, one of the two. Nevertheless, there's no connection between us because of the weight or the distance or the stilts that are here. Nevertheless, by Nidan Zavai is Tameh. The question here, does that apply to Avodah Zarah? Rabbi Akiva Savar Kinida. Akiva says, listen, Avodah Zarah is exactly like a Nida. Madida mitama be'even misma. Avodah Zarah mitama be'even misma. It's the whole kit and caboodle. You want Nida, Nida across the board. It means not only for Tumat Masami, it's for Tumat Even Misma. The whole thing. Tumat like a Nida. Rabbanan Savre Kisheret. Wait, we have an offsetting pasuk from Dvarim that says that there's only too much sheretz here. What does the offset of too much sheretz do here? Ma sheretz lo mitameh be'evin misma, avodah zarah lo mitameh be'evin misma. Just like a sheretz doesn't have evin misma, so too, the avodah zarah doesn't have evin misma. Uli Rabbi Akiva, lamhai hilchotai itkish the sheretz. Wait a minute. So according to Rabbi Akiva, what does he do with the pasuk in Dvarim? He needs to do something with it. The chachamim address both psukim. They said it's like a nida, it's mitameh be'masa. It's like a sheretz, in that it doesn't have tumat, even misma. So then, Rabbi Akiva addressed one pasuk, nida, it's like nida across the board. But what about this pasuk of sheretz? He says, that is lemishamshin. That is for things that are servicing the Avodah Zarah. Things that are used in the worship of the Avodah Zarah, they only have tumat like a sheretz. Now Rashi says over here, lemishamshim, she'en akelim, ha'mishamshim mitamim, lo b'masa, v'lo b'even misma. Rashi says, the Havamina would have been that they're just like Avodah Zarah, and they have a din like a Nida. Along comes Sheretz to say that they don't have Tumat Masa, they don't have Tevin Misma, they don't have anything. They just have the Tumat Sheretz. But Rashi starts out with a premise that you would have thought the Mishamshim are equal to Avodah Zarah, and Sheretz comes and drops it down. Tosafot, the Ri, says just the opposite. He says, the Havamina would have been that the Mishamshim have no Tumat whatsoever. Why would you ever have thought that the Mishamshim have a din of Tumat Nida? The comparison to Nida is Avodah Zarah itself that is compared to the Nida. You would have no Havamina to say that the Mishamshim should have a din like Tumat Nida. And all the Sheretz comes to do is tell you that they have Tumat Sheretz, that they have Tumat all. So it's just what the starting point is. According to Rashi, the starting point is that you would have been equal to Avodah Zarah. Sheretz takes it down. According to Sofot, it works the other way around. The Mishamshim would have no Tumah whatsoever. Sheretz elevates them to the level that they have Tumah to Sheretz. But then the Gemara says, okay, Ula Rabbanan, the Mahilkotah itkish the Nida. So let's think about this. The Rabbanan say the reason that they connected between Avodah Zarah and Nida is to tell you that it has Tumat Lemasa, Tumat Masa. Well, I have a much simpler way to deal with that. We have other Tumot that have Tumat Masa and do not have Tumat Even Misma. Save yourself a lot of trouble. No Tumat Sheretz. No Tumat Nida. Just use this Tumah, and then you'd have your solution, which is, look Sherachmano Nivela. Nivela is exactly what you're looking for. It has Tumah, Tumat Masa, no Tumat Even Misma, and that's exactly what you're looking for. So compare the Avodah Zarah to a Nivela. Why bother comparing it to a Nida, and then trying to take it out of Nida by comparing it to Sheretz? Just compare it to a Nivela, and then you won't have any problem. Gemara says, "Ein ochanami, you could have done that. Elama nida, ein alei varim. Avodah Zarah, ein alei varim." There's an additional reason why we compare it to nida, not just to learn tumat masa, but also to teach you that nida only applies to a woman when she's still a whole. That if for some reason an aver was severed from a woman while she was a nida, that aver does not take with it tumat nida. It has Tumat Ever Minachai, but it does not have Tumat Nida. Tumat Nida is only true when the woman or the Aver, the part, is still a part of the woman. But once it's broken away or taken away from the woman, then she's no longer has Tumat Nida. So just like by the Nida, when an Aver is severed from the woman, Chas V'Shalom, something, an Aver is taken or it's severed from the woman, that Aver will not continue to have Tumat Nida. It'll have Tumat Ever Minachai, but not Tumat Nida. So too over here, the Avodah Zarah, when it's in component parts, if the component parts are taken apart, it comes apart, Rashi says, kigon, Avodah Zarah shel chuliot, Lego, Avodah Zarah of Lego. It's like a erector set that they put together. So it's component parts, and you can take it apart. So if you take it apart, Eivra mino, ani mitameh klal, mishum Avodah Zarah. Tumat Avodah Zarah only applies then if it's component parts that make up the Avodah Zarah, it only applies when it's all together. You break it up, you break it into its component parts, then it no longer has Tumah anymore, just like the Nida. So the Chachamim say, you're right. And had it only had to do with the union of Tumah, in Ochanami we would have compared it to Nevela. But the Torah wanted to teach us one other thing, which is that it's like a Nida in this fact that Evarim, this issue that when it breaks apart into the component parts, it doesn't continue its tumah. Its tumah breaks away, just like by nidah. Tumah breaks away when the eva breaks away, so too by the avodah zarah. So that's what I said before. The Yushalmi says, Tosafot brings the Yushalmi, that they worshipped every single stone separately, so that it would not be that it was a whole, and then it broke apart. That each stone or each piece of wood there was separate avodah zarah. So you don't have exactly part of your question, or more the question from the Gemara of Avodah Zarah, that if it fell apart by itself, it should be batel. So the answer is no, because they worshipped each component part here. And therefore, stone wasn't a separate part, was a piece of Avodah Zarah. It was the Avodah Zarah. Alright, so now the Gemara continues and says, Velaha, Dibai Rami Chama Barguya. We have this question posed, Avodah Zarah, Yeshta Leivarim or Ina Leivarim? He has this question. Does Avodah Zarah have component parts or not? Tifsha Leimaha. You could answer it from here, to the Rabbanan, Eina Le'evari, that according to the Rabbanan, there is no component parts to Avodah Zarah. So the Gemara says, Rav Chama Bar Gurya, Libet Rabbi Akiva Bo'ilo, Eino Chanami. According to Rabbanan, Rav Chama Bar Gurya didn't have a question. His question was according to Rabbi Akiva's Shita. According to Rabbi Akiva, who doesn't have this comparison to Nida to teach us about Evarim, what's the din of Evarim according to Rabbi Akiva? There, we don't necessarily have an answer to it, because Rabbi Akiva's comparison to Nida is solely for the purpose of Tumah. It doesn't have anything to do with the issue of Evarim. And so Rabbi Chama Bar Gurya's question is posed according to Rabbi Akiva's Shita, not according to the Shita of the Rachachamim. That's Rabbo's explanation of their Machloket. Rabbi Lazar Amar, no, that this is the Machloket between Rabbi Akiva and the Rachachamim. Be'evin misma, tukuli amalo plivye. Everybody agrees they don't argue. Delo mitama. Everybody says that it's not mitama. Now, there's a question in the Girsa over here, and the question in the Girsa brings up a Reshbam who wants to change the remainder of the Gemara a little bit. We don't have it. You can see it here in the on the side of the Masorah Tashas, that he says, the lo mitama da itkish l'sheretz, because it's connected to sheretz. So what the suggestion at this point is, the reason that Eved Misma is not mitama here is because of the position of the Chachamim in Rabbah. Rabbah said before, what do the Chachamim do? They take Nida, they take Sheretz, so they take a balance between them and they come out with the Tumah. So that's the same thing here, except according to Rabbalaz, that's everybody's approach. Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim agree that that's the approach here. Evan Misma, right, is not included because you have Sheretz. Sheretz eliminates it. Nida includes Masa, it seems. Kibliga ibn Masa. Oh, they argue about Masa. Rabbi Kiva Savar, ki Nida. Ma Nida mitama be Masa. Avodah Zarah mitama b'masa. Just like a nida is mitama b'masa, so too Avodah Zarah is mitama b'masa. V'rabbanan savrei k'sheretz. My sheretz lo mitama b'masa, Avodah Zarah lo mitama b'masa. Just like a sheretz is not mitama b'masa, so too Avodah Zarah will not be mitama b'masa. The obvious question you have to ask on the Chachamim is, then why compare it to a nida at all? Just compare it to a sheretz, and what do you need nida here at all? The problematic part of the Gemara is the next piece, which is, Rabbi Akiva, the Mahilkata Itkish the Sheretz. According to Rabbi Akiva, why are you comparing it to a Sheretz? According to the Girsa that the Rashbam had, it's clear that this part of the Gemara doesn't make sense. Because that Girsa says, why is Evan Misma not included? Evan Misma is not included because Nida and Sheretz. So Rabbi Akiva used Sheretz to eliminate Evan Misma. So why is the Gemara now asking the Mahilkata Itkish the Sheretz? So according to the Rashbam, this should be eliminated from the Gemara. The way we have it in our Girsa, which does not have that as the reason, the Tosafot says, we don't know why Rabbi Akiva eliminated Evan Misma. We don't know if it's because of Sheretz, or maybe he has some other ribuy in the Pasuk. We don't know where Rabbi Akiva's source is from. And that's why the Gemara asks, Rabbi Akiva l'ma'a yilcha ta'id kish l'sheretz. Why did he compare it to Sheretz? He learned out Evan Misma, no Evan Misma, we don't know where he learned that from. Could have been Sheretz, but we don't know that's the case. So then what does he do with Sheretz? So that's why Tosafot argues to leave the Girsa in, because says that it's not necessarily true that the reason that Evan Misma is eliminated here is because of Sheretz. If you have it in the Girsa, then you have a problem, and then this latter half of the Gemara makes no sense. Again, the same way we said before is for the things that are used in service of Avodah Zarah. So they have too much Sheretz. There's a stronger problem here, which is, what do the Rabbanan have it connected to Nida for at all? Ma Nida ina le'ivrim, Avodah Zarah ina le'ivrim. We made sense of it. Everything's really like Sheretz according to the Chachamim. What's Nida doing here at all? That's just telling you this din that component parts don't maintain the Tumah of the Avodah Zarah. That's why it's compared to Nida. But for nothing else, Everything else is exactly like a sheretz. Now, the question really is on Rabbi Akiva. Before we had the question of Chachamim, why compare it to Nida and Sheretz? Why not just use Nevela? Over here, Rabbi Akiva's in that position. What does Rabbi Akiva say? Tumat Avodah Zarah. No Evan Misma. Yesh Tumat Masa. So why bother with Nida? Just go straight to the Tumah that has that, which is Tumat Nevela. And that's the question I'm asking now. Rabbi Akiva, the Mahilcha Tait Kishna Nida. Why bother bringing it together with Nida? Why Lamasa? Look, Shayla Nevela. Just connect it to Nevela instead. Where it says Einochanami. In this case, Rabbi Akiva has the same din as the Chachamim out of Nida. You could have compared it to Nevela. Why did the Torah not compare it to Nevela instead to Nida? To teach us that additional din, like the Chachamim, that component parts don't have Tumah. Now you can answer the question. Ben the Rabbanan, Ben the Rabbi Kiya, Dein Alei Varim. You're right. You have an answer here. Better, according to Rabbi Kiva or Chachamim, the only reason Anita was brought in here at all was to teach you that component parts don't have Tuma. We have an answer for Rabbi Chama Bar Guria. The Rabbi Chama Bar Guria, Karabi Matni. But first of all, it's clear that Rabbi Bar Guria's question is learning it like Rabbo. Ubayla Libet to Rabbi Akiva. And he's learning according to Rabbi Akiva. His question is, only in Rabbi Kiva Shita, Aliva de Rabba. And that's the answer of the Gemara. Ein Ochanami. If you learn the Machloket like Rabbi Elazar over here, there's nothing to talk about. There's no question for Rabbi Chama Bar Guria. So Rabbi Chama Bar Guria's question is posed based on Rabba's interpretation of the Machloket, and in Rabbi Kiva Shita of that Machloket, where we don't know what he says about Evarim, and that's where his question is posed. Ein Ochanami. So just to summarize what we saw so far, we had a Mishnah that tells us that Nida is compared to Avodah Zarah to teach us that there is some sort of connection between them in Tumah. Eino Chanami, that exists, and that Pasuk Nishaya exists, nobody can ignore that. We have a position of the Chachamim that says that Tumat Avodah Zarah is like Sheretz, and Rabbi Kiva says it's like Tumat Nida. So how do they have to deal with each other's Psukim? And we have two approaches that we have Rabba's approach and Rabbi Elazar's approach. Rabba's approach is to say that Rabbi Kiva says Nida all the way, and has Tumah exactly like Nida, and the Chachamim are just a step below him. They say Eino Chanami has Tumat Nida, just missing Evan Misma. That's the only thing that you're missing, but Eino Chanami has that Tumat Nida. That's what Sheretz does. Sheretz pulls it down one level. Rabbi Elazar, on the other hand, says that everybody agrees that it's not totally like Nida. Everybody agrees Evan Misma is out of the picture here. The only question is it like Nida for Masa? Or is it like Sheretz completely? Chachamim say completely like Sheretz. Rabbi Akiva says, like Nida that has Masa. In all these cases, both in the first case and the second case, what's the point of telling us about Tumat Masa through Nida? You can tell us through Nevela. The answer is that Nida teaches an additional din. That when you have component parts, those component parts don't maintain the Tumah when they're broken up. Okay, we'll stop over here.